This massacre was carried out by the Red Sticks, a Creek Confederacy faction that was allied with Tecumseh, who we talked about previously. To remind people, he was a Shawnee chief who was fighting with the British against the United States, and they had killed nearly 250 militiamen and civilians at Fort Mims in retaliation for an ambush by American militia at Burnt Corn Creek.
Yeah, you want to throw a comma on that sentence? Good God. Also, Red Sticks, I believe that's not the proper way to say it. I think they're the commandeers now.
Welcome back to the Triletteral Troika. This is Steve, along with the other Steve.
Ugh.
And Ryan.
Frosty crack open of a Florida Avenue. Listen, this is the weirdest thing I've ever tasted in my life, right? Listen, this beer is brewed by Florida Avenue, and it's called Let Us Eat Cake. It's Strawberry Shortcake Lager. Just go with me,
dude,
on this one, right?
I've never in my life wanted to persecute a beer guy, but right now I feel like doing so. I would like to persecute you, sir.
Just hear me out. It's really good. Like, it doesn't taste
it's
like strawberry.
It's that strawberry shortcake porter that they cooked in an Easy Bake Oven.
It's my pre-gaming, so I'm going down to the Strawberry Festival in Plant City tomorrow, so I'm pre-gaming.
Oh, nice.
Strawberry lager.
You're going to see Reba?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I'm a survivor and all that.
Dude, we've been there a whole bunch of times. I mean... We must have took home, like, way more strawberries than you could eat as a human being. And then, like, while you're there, you know, you get everything fried. Like, I had two shoes when I went there, but by the time I got home, one of them had been dipped in a deep fryer. I don't know how.
I was going to say one got fried.
Yeah, I don't know how it happened. And then there's, dude, let me give you some, have you been there before?
I've never been to the strawberry.
Okay. If there's the old, like, there's, like, the old town section area, okay? There's, like, a section where they do, like, crafts when they're all dressed up like the original racists. So,
okay. And we're talking about the same one in Plant City, right?
Yeah. So one of the women there is, like, a, it's like a shaker area, I think. Like, the shakers, like, the furniture makers. And,
Oh, they like the shitty Quakers?
Yeah, and she, I think it's on the other side of the big tent where you can get pie. You can get apple pie in there, I think. But on the other side of that tent, there's a lady who, like, makes rope, like, traditionally. And she, like, does this unceasing philosophical, like, spiel about it that was, like, impenetrable. Like, I was trying to understand what she was saying. And it was impossible. So I have this rope to this day, and it was fucking ridiculous. But I recommend seeking her out. I gotta get
recklessly high and go just watch this lady make rope.
No, dude, don't do that. You'll fucking break yourself. This lady was going into, like, some, I don't know, Lamarckianism, like, arguments. Like, what the fuck is... It was ridiculous, dude. But
listen,
the strawberries are a close second to what I just said.
I'm all about the Mark Twainism. Like, I like Huckleberry Finn.
Hell yeah,
you know, I didn't like his friend's name. I think it's pretty fucked up when he named his friend.
Yeah, that's pretty fucked up. That's a pretty shitty name for a friend there, Huckleberry.
But speaking of people who are shitty friends.
Speaking of Huckleberry Finn's fuckery. Huckle fuckery.
You're not too far off, boys.
Oh God.
Oh sweet.
We're gonna start talking about one Andrew Jackson.
Oh, okay.
Wait, are we talking about the guy that's on the 20 that doesn't deserve to be?
Dude, let me tell you something about the Strawberry Festival. There's an Andrew Jackson. God damn it.
Like they have the retired mascot from the pierogi race or what? No, not the pierogi race. The president's race that they have at the capitals.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The pierogi race. It sounds like something my dad does when, like, the food's ready. You know,
the pierogi race.
He beat us all there again. Fucking pierogi race.
Knocking people down just to get those pierogies.
Hey, give me some of them pierogies.
Yes. Andrew Jackson, he was born on March 15th, 1767 in the Waxhaws region of the Carolinas.
Waxhaws?
Yeah. Like Mr. Miyagi, wax on, wax off.
Okay.
But his parents were Scots-Irish colonists named Andrew Jackson and Elizabeth Hutchinson. They were Presbyterians who had emigrated from Ulster, Ireland in 1765.
Over there in Ulster. Ulster. I tell you, boy, he's up there in Ulster.
His father was born in Carrickfergus. What accent was
that? Jesus. Carrickfergus is actually a really popular Irish song.
In County Antrim. And around 1738, and his ancestors had crossed into Northern Ireland from Scotland after the Battle of the Boyne in 1690.
The Battle of the Boyne.
The Boyne. I think it's B-O-I-G-N-E, I think, right? Isn't that French?
It's B-O-Y-N-E.
Is it?
Yeah.
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 It's Where's, Irish.
Where is it? Like, I've never heard of it. I've never heard of it before.
I think it was in Ireland.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's in like, Northern Ireland.
Hmm.
I'm pretty sure it's by the Giant's Causeway. I could be wrong.
Do you mean Southern England? Is that what you mean?
I'll kill you.
No, you won't. You kill the English, and it'll be much
fair enough. But I bet you I can justify it. He has some English blood in you somewhere.
Yeah, I know, right?
I mean, pretty, by that metric, I probably do.
Oh, man.
So, hey, I have a question.
France is looking pretty good right now, I'll be honest with you.
Was Adolf Hitler welcomed at the pearly gates because he's technically also the person that killed Adolf Hitler?
No, there's probably some, you know...
Did he, like, logic his way into heaven?
No, there's probably some special laws for that. I mean, God did have eternity to come up with the idea. Yeah, suicide is a sin.
Was he Catholic? Was he Catholic?
Probably not.
He was not any religion. Like, he was opposed to, like... The Nazis were generally opposed to, like, Christianity.
What do you think it could happen in 2025? We finally unearth Hitler's journals. He was a Jew.
Oh, my God.
I swear to
God. Oh,
but he was Austrian, so he was probably Catholic.
Okay, all right. So, yeah, suicide's a sin, so he was double-fucking himself there. Never mind. Yeah. I was like, did he just find himself a heavenly loophole? Yeah, guys, that's Hitler. He's not getting in here. Yeah, but I am also the guy who killed Hitler, though, so... Son of a bitch.
You gotta talk this one out. They go into the break room.
Peter Paul are like, just sit out there for a minute. We'll be back.
Just go into the break room. They're just like, what do we do?
They're all tough one. No, they're all sitting there. They're real tense, and they decide to call God in the room. And,
I'm like banging on the table. He's like, you son of a bitch. I told you this was going to happen.
But they wait for like 2 or 3 seconds. And then one of them goes, God. And God just goes, what?
Peter's just smoking cigarettes.
Burning heaters.
He's like Matthew McConaughey in that meme looking at his phone. He's, you know what, smoking cigarettes. He's staring at God, knowing what he's got to tell him.
Yeah, man. Fucking True Detective. Yeah, he's freaking, he's smoking Merits. You remember Merits?
Listen.
They look like off-brand Newports from a distance.
God, listen. Remember, okay.
From a distance. Merits are Newports.
Sir, listen, I just want to preface this by that when it happened, we all kind of told you that this was a possibility. This guy showed up to the gate. You'll never guess who it is.
Merits aren't new ports. God damn. I go for a cigarette right now, to be honest with you.
Don't do it.
Fuck you, dude. I'll never touch a cigarette again in my life. No way, dude. I quit smoking twice. I'm done.
Thank you.
I quit 15 years ago. And
good man.
Ugh.
Actually, me too. Exactly. 15
nice. Years ago. Nice. Good for you, too. That's awesome. Yeah, I'm just happy my parents stopped. My mom stopped a few years ago, but, you know, this last trip to the hospital got my dad completely off of him. So, yeah. Which
I got
out
of prison.
Crazy.
I'm like, this is disgusting, and these are expensive. I'm done.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think part of the appeal was, like, when you're still cellularly fairly immortal, and cigarettes are still $1.25 a pack, you're like, I might as well.
You know? I'm bored enough. Fuck it. Let me smoke.
I'm not going to do this football shit all year. I'm fucking quitting. I'm getting into punk rock, and I'm smoking cigarettes.
I'm going to...
Let's do it.
Well, you know, you could have just did football and smoked cigarettes like they did in the
60s. Oh, I did that. I did that.
We just like Johnny Unitas.
Or Johnny Unitas and Joe Namath on the sidelines. Nothing quite gets the nick off your back like one of the fresh, smooth tastes of a Camel cigarette.
I hurt my shoulder, so that's why I ended up not playing football anymore. Like, I ultimately realized that I just didn't want to play football. I'm not a fighter. Can't do it.
That's fair.
I can't be aggressive on command. Like, something's really got to piss me off for me to be, like, you know? And, like, just being around that shit was ridiculous. It's like Terry Crews said about football. Like, he said it was prison with salaries or something like that.
Yeah.
Because you're constantly posturing, everybody's type A, and when you're in the NFL, like, you know, in his case, they're, like, the best of the best, so it's, like, everybody is trying to get everybody else. There's always somebody trying to take your job, you know, shank you and take your position kind of thing. I'm like, man, that is an apropos analogy. Jeez.
Speaking of getting shanked...
Jackson had two older brothers who came with his parents from Ireland.
Taking like a hit off a nebulizer? What was that?
I was waiting for you to jump in, you know.
Oh, okay.
Jackson had two older brothers who came with his parents from Ireland. Hugh, born in 1763, and Robert, born in 1764.
Hugh Jackman? I'm sorry, Jackson. Hugh Jackson. Sorry.
Yes.
His mother, Elizabeth, had a strong hatred of the British that she passed on to her sons.
No shit.
Fair. Reasonable.
Jackson's exact birthplace is unclear. His father died at the age of 29 in February of 1767.
No, Steve.
He was old.
Steve, my own personal scholars have looked into this, and he was definitely born in infancy.
But Jackson's father died at the age of 29 in February 1767. Three weeks before his. What was it? He didn't die of old age.
Yeah, but if you're 29, that's old as shit back in the 1700s. You might as well have been in a nursing home.
Yeah, you're like a you're a multi-war veteran. You have half a fucking mouth of fake teeth. Like you're old.
It's five jobs.
Five jobs.
Already a heavy.
I got five jobs, and each one of them's a pain in the ass. And their names are.
He died 3 weeks before Andrew was born, and afterwards, Elizabeth and her three sons moved in with her sister and brother-in-law, Jane and James Crawford.
Hmm. Fucking deadbeat dad.
Jackson later stated that he was born on the Crawford Plantation, which is in Lancaster County, South Carolina, but secondhand evidence suggests that he might have been born at another uncle's home in North Carolina.
North Kakalaki.
When Andrew was young, Elizabeth thought he might become a minister and paid to have him schooled by a local clergyman. He learned to read, write, and work with numbers and was exposed to Greek and Latin, but he was too strong-willed and hot-tempered for the profession.
Wait, you mean they were doing a Bolito back then, too? You said he could work the numbers, so I was wondering back then.
Basically, he was running from deli to the bodega, down to the barbershop, just kind of collecting numbers, dropping off packages, you know, just running the things, you know,
doing scores.
Making sure they missed that last pin and nine pins, you know, he didn't have to pay out.
Scores and whores.
Super gluing it to the ground so it doesn't move.
Jackson and his older brothers, Hugh and Robert, would serve on the side of the Patriots in the American Revolution.
Hugh would...
What? Yeah.
They win the Super Bowl. He started for the Patriots, right?
Yeah, Tom Brady was there. You know, he had just started.
Nah, he's not that old.
He's just immortal because he's just mostly water now. Hugh served under Colonel William Richardson Davy, and he would die from heat exhaustion after the Battle of Stono Ferry in June of 1779. After anti-British sentiment intensified in the southern colonies following the Battle of Waxhaws in May of 1780, Elizabeth encouraged Andrew and Robert to participate in militia drills. They served as couriers and were present at the Battle of Hanging Rock in August of 1780.
Also, delivery boys.
Andrew and Robert were captured in April of 1781 when the British occupied the home of a Crawford relative. During this time, a British officer demanded that his boots be polished, which Andrew refused, and the officer would slash him with a sword, leaving him with scars on his left hand and head. Robert also refused and was struck in the head by the officer.
Good man. Don't ever polish that dude's boots. Fuck that.
The brothers were taken to a prisoner of war camp in Camden, South Carolina, where they became malnourished and contracted smallpox.
Less cool.
In late spring, the brothers were released to their mother in a prisoner exchange. Robert would die 2 days after he arrived home, but Elizabeth was able to keep Andrew alive. Once he recovered, Elizabeth volunteered to nurse American prisoners of war housed in British prison ships in the harbor of Charleston. She would contract cholera during that time and die soon afterwards.
Oof.
Andrew Jackson would be made an orphan at the age of 14, and it would increase his hatred of the values associated with the British, mainly the aristocracy and political privilege.
Literally doesn't surprise me.
After the
British effectively killed your parents, so.
Yeah, and they already hated them to begin with, so.
Right.
After the American Revolution, Jackson worked as a saddler, briefly returned to school, and taught reading and writing to children. You know, I think that mainly happened, you know, because they didn't have, like, gym. And, you know, he wasn't, like, the history teacher that, like, wheeled out the TV or whatever. And it's like... yeah, we're going to watch Ferngully again.
Keep your voices down. I'm hungover. Shut up. I swear to God, you can see him pouring whiskey into his mug.
Mr. Jackson's going to go with the
bloody rickets.
And grade these papers. It's just him like sleeping on his desk.
They turning the lights off. He's like, "Shut up! If you don't talk, you get an A."
In 1784, he left the Waxhaws region for Salisbury, North Carolina, where he studied law under the attorney Spruce McKay.
Dan Nolan.
It's like, you have the largest forehead I've ever seen on a man. I will study law under you.
Have you been injured by the British? Call me now.
As a former sheriff's deputy, I take these cases to their conclusion. I will fight for you.
You know, when he had the MAGA hat on in the Super Bowl commercial, his head is so big that the MAGA hat just looked extra big. So it was like a real life bobblehead, you know? I was like, God damn, look at this fucking idiot. And he's on that big truck.
Hat.
Why is he on that truck? You know, is it because...
He wore the MAGA hat like Patrick Mahomes wore his helmet. Just like sitting on top of his head. It just didn't make sense.
I don't know how he lost, dog. I don't know. It was close. No, it wasn't.
He completed his training under John Stokes. And was admitted to the North Carolina Bar.
It should just be more like, I don't know how he lost.
He was admitted to the North Carolina Bar in September of 1787. Shortly after this, his friend John McNary helped him get appointed as a prosecuting attorney in the Western District of North Carolina, which would later become the state of Tennessee. While traveling to assume his new position, Jackson would stop in Jonesboro.
Take me to another place.
While he was there, he would buy his first slave, a woman who was around his age.
Jesus Christ, here we go.
Here it starts.
He also fought his first duel, accusing another lawyer waits still Avery of impugning his character. The duel would end impugning.
Yeah.
Yes.
I was misspelled.
Basically, he said you're a liar. Dan Newland would say I'm impugning his character by saying he's a fucking ambulance chaser because he's a goddamn personal injury attorney.
Oh, yeah. I used him when that I got in an accident, dude. You know what, though? I called because I didn't know who else to call. So I was like, I'm either going to call Morgan and Morgan or Dan Newland. So I was like, fuck it, I'll call Dan Newland. Dude, let me tell you something. He runs a fucking operation over there, man.
Yeah, dude.
I'm just saying, like, yeah, you give him 33% or whatever, but, like, you know. it's a lot, but, like, if you think about it, I didn't have to do anything. They did everything
for me. 33%. Holy shit.
Oh, yeah, they make a lot, bro. Dude, he did everything, though. He called every doctor. I didn't have to do shit. They just told me where to go. Like, you know, you're going to do rehab here. You're going to get your scans here. Anytime I emailed them, they responded, like, instantaneously, you know. Yeah. It was ridiculous. Yeah, they have a very tight operation over there, man. There's a reason he makes all that money. Like, it's no bullshit. Anyway, I do recommend him, even though he's a piece of shit.
The duel between the two men would end with them firing their guns in the air.
Oh, dang.
Shitty duel.
Like, why? Why?
Well, generally, most duels is that you consider it honor to be preserved if you both just fire your guns in the air instead of at each other.
That makes you a pussy. How is that your honor?
Because you don't actually want to kill the other person.
Yes, you do. That's the whole point of challenging him to a fucking duel.
Not always.
No, but they don't always want to do it, I think is what he's saying.
Yeah.
It's like two boxers getting into the ring and being like, actually, we're going to hug it out.
I don't know, dog. I'm out, dog. I can't do it.
It's more like a situation where, like, you're heated in the moment, but you don't actually want to, like, go through with it.
Yeah, you know that song.
But you have to because you said, like, you that it had to happen.
Dude, if you show up and you challenge me to a duel and you show up and shoot your gun in the air, you're cooked. It's all I'm saying. You challenge me to a duel, I'm here to kill you, bro. Like, there's no...
Well, I will say that this happened to be the case in other duels between Andrew Jackson and people.
Yeah. Okay. It was just political.
He would begin his
new career... It's all good, dog. I'm going to shoot up, all right?
God, listen, I know Andrew Jackson's a piece of shit, so it wouldn't surprise me in later duels if he's like, all right, we're going to walk 20 paces and then turn and fire, and he walks like six. Just starts to shoot somebody in the fucking back. He's a piece of shit. I wouldn't put it past him, but...
He would begin his new career in the frontier town of Nashville in 1788 and quickly moved up in social status.
Noted frontier town, Nashville, Tennessee.
He became a protege of William Blount, one of the most powerful men in the Tennessee Territory. Jackson was appointed Attorney General of the Marrow District in 1791 and Judge Advocate for the Militia the following year.
Well, I went off of the Marrow. Hey, now who's your man? Sorry, it's a good song.
He also got involved in land speculation, eventually forming a partnership with a fellow lawyer, John Overton. Their partnership mainly dealt with claims made around a land grab act of 1783 that opened Cherokee and Chickasaw territory to North Carolina white residents. Jackson had also become a slave trader, transporting enslaved people for the interregional slave market between Nashville and the Natchez district of Spanish West Florida via the Mississippi River and the Natchez Trace. While boarding at the home of Rachel Stockley Donaldson, the widow of John Donaldson, Jackson became acquainted with their daughter, Rachel Donaldson Robarts. The younger Rachel was in an unhappy marriage with Captain Lewis Robarts.
Captain Lou Albano.
Yeah.
I don't know what the problem is here, Rachel. I don't know how we're going to keep doing that.
I keep getting hit by all of the rubber bands in your beard.
You know, you leave them on there so long that they get crusty, like old rubber bands. You ever seen those, Lou? No, you haven't, because you only care about yourself.
After their and the two separated in 1789. After the separation, Jackson and Rachel became romantically involved, living together as husband and wife.
They was fucking. Basically, he bought his wife, and he just didn't want to say it.
But Robards petitioned for divorce, which was granted in 1793, based on Rachel's infidelity. The couple would legally marry in January of 1794. In 1796, they acquired their first plantation, Hunter's Hill, on 640 acres of land near Nashville.
Jesus Christ. 648. God. And he honestly, that probably cost him, like, in today's money, $350. Unreal.
He gave him some nickels and a stick of spearmint gum, but only because he drove a hard bargain.
And he gave him a good solid handshake and firm handshake, looked him in the eye, and gave him a good promise he'd take care of that land. Fuck off.
Jackson would become a member of the Democratic Republican Party, which was the dominant party in Tennessee.
What?
Yeah, that's the precursor to the Democrats.
You're Democrat or Republican? I'm in the Democratic Republican Party, actually.
I'm in the Problem Solvers Caucus. We don't.
What do you do in that caucus? Actually, we create problems.
He was elected as a delegate to the Tennessee Constitutional Convention in 1796. When Tennessee achieved statehood that year, he was elected to be its U.S. representative. In Congress, he would argue against the Jay Treaty, criticize George Washington for allegedly removing Democratic Republicans from public office, and joined several other Democratic Republican congressmen in voting against a resolution of thanks for Washington.
So the Republican Party has always been shit. This is
the Democratic Party. The Republican Party comes out of the Whig Party later on.
But didn't the Democrat Party inevitably flip to be the Republican Party?
The Republican
Party as it was that came out of the Whig would have flipped to be the Democrat Party that we know today?
Well, I guess from like more liberal to more conservative, but I guess it's more like seen as more the it's sort of hard to explain it in those dynamics. But the Democrats do flip around the time of like FDR. They've always been sort of more of the populist party, not in the sense of like populist, but more in the sense that they were more liberal. Whereas the more conservative parties, like the Federalists and the Whigs, and then the Republicans were more of a somewhat more of like a like big man party.
Okay.
He advocated for the right of Tennesseans to militarily oppose Native American interests. And the state legislature elected him to be a U.S. senator in 1797, but he resigned after serving only 6 months.
Do we know why, or did he just say, fuck this?
I think he just said, fuck it.
Gotcha.
In early 1798, Governor John Sevier appointed Jackson to be the judge of the Tennessee Superior Court. In 1802, he also became a major general or commander of the Tennessee militia, a position that was determined by a vote of the militia's officers.
Listen, I swear to God, this sounds like when you watch like little kids play. I'm a judge, but I'm also a major general, and I'm also a commander, and I'm also, like, come on, listen, pick a fucking lane, my man.
He also has a level 5 shield, which protects him from laser attacks, and you need to know that, because they're not going to work on it.
I'm also president, so I'm untouchable, because I have something that is the precursor to the Secret Service, so I'm bulletproof. Like, dog.
And I'm also the parliamentarian, so nothing can get done.
No, just pick a fucking lane. Why are you doing everything? Just do one thing and do good at one thing.
The vote was tied between Jackson and Sevier, who was a popular Revolutionary War veteran and former governor, but the current governor, Archibald Rowan, broke the tie in Jackson's favor. Jackson would later accuse Sevier of fraud and bribery. And Sevier responded by impugning Rachel's honor, resulting in a shootout on a public street.
Oh, shit.
Soon afterwards, they met to duel, but parted without having fired at each other.
You gotta shoot out like the movie fucking Heat in the middle of the street. But when it comes down to actually duel, you don't even want to fire a shot? What is wrong with you?
Like, well, you know, because it's not your money, it's the bank's money, it's insured.
Like, similar to Heat, but a little bit different, because he probably fired, like, one round a minute.
They just fired a round at each other, and then they had to take 5 minutes to reload and make sure the powder was dry and everything, and then...
During that 5 minutes, you have, like, people walking past him on the street while they're, like, crouched down reloading. These people, like, walking past him just staring at him, like, what the hell is wrong with them? They just jump back up, fire one more shot, jump back down again.
One of them rolls out from behind, like, a barrel. But he points his gun down and like the ball rolls out. He's just like, fuck. Then he had to go back and reload it.
He rolls back behind the barrel.
Jackson would resign his judgeship in 1804. He'd almost gone bankrupt when the land and mercantile speculations that he had based much of his promissory notes on fell apart in the wake of an early financial panic. He had to sell Hunter's Hill as well as 25,000 acres of land he bought for speculation, and bought a smaller 420-acre plantation near Nashville that he would call the Hermitage. So, you know, he had to downsize. You know, the economy's bad. You know, he had to go from the 640-acre plantation to the 420-acre plantation.
I know why he got 420 acres. Smoking mutton. Although, to be fair, there is pretty good evidence that the Founding Fathers did smoke weed, just not like what we currently think of as weed.
I mean, I don't think Andrew Jackson, for obvious reasons, would be a big fan of Rastafarian music, even though he's definitely, even though if he was around today, he'd definitely be one of those like racist white guys that drives like a Ford F-150, but is always blasting like rap music.
But also, if you look on his computer, is searching nothing but black porn.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just loves, he has like a subscription to black.com. Yeah. And, and he really likes Sublime.
Jesus Christ. I can see it right now.
And then around like 8 years ago, he got really into those like weirdo, like Trump rappers. The ones with like the really shitty facial hair, the face tattoos. Dude, his name
is Steve. I completely blocked that out, bro.
I think it's Flaggio Blow or something like that.
Yeah, you suck, Flaggio dude. I had completely blocked that out of my memory. Now it's back.
I just like love a, the
like
one a, guy
like
gave...
the fucking goddamn McRib. It's back.
I just love the one. I think it was one of those guys that gave Trump the. I think it was a Cybertruck or something that had the rap on it of when Trump got shot. And it was like, it just giving a man a giant picture of that time he almost died. That he's like terrified of.
Oh my God.
The Hermitage, there he would focus on recovering from his losses by becoming a successful planter and merchant. The Hermitage grew to 1,000 acres, making it one of the largest cotton-growing plantations in the state. Because post the American Revolutionary War, like land speculation got to be very big, and that they had a big problem with people who were just squatting. Like George Washington actually went on a tour, like after he was done being president, because he was broke. And he had to go around to like all these properties that he owned and just like get people to pay rent, to just be like an angry like landlord and get people to pay him rent that they owed for squatting on his land.
Oh my God. Or you could get rid of all that land and break it up and give it to people, and then you won't have to worry about paying taxes or anything else on it.
Yeah, but Ryan, have you heard a little something called passive income?
Yeah. Where's your hustle? Where's your heart?
I think I saw a YouTube video about this. I think they kept mentioning drop shipping. Does that sound familiar?
Well, if you go to George Washington's library, you can see his degree from Hustlers University
and his Hard Knocks.
And his copy of Rich Dad Poor Dad.
Oh my God, stop it right now.
Destitute, wealthy, wealthy patriarch and destitute yeah. father.
He also has on his bookshelf The Art of War by Sun Tzu and The Secret by, was it Mira Byrne? And then he's got that other fucking stupid ass one that always comes up in these successful businessmen libraries. Shut up.
He has his vision board. obviously, like most of the planters in the southern United States, Jackson would use slave labor.
No.
In 1804, no. he had 9 slaves.
What kind
in
of
1820,
slaves? The Irish?
Yeah, Steve, because, you know, they were the real slaves.
I swear to God, I had somebody make that unironic argument to me one time, and I was like, do you not know the difference between indentured servitude and slavery? Just like, what? God damn it.
And they had to use slavery as well, because all the indentured servants, like, most of them, like, died, because they essentially got worked to death.
The same person that told me that, I was also like, hey, listen, where is the Irish version of Roots? Like, show me that. Go ahead. Yeah. No.
What's that movie about the
No, my name's McSully. No, your name's Toby. Like, what the
fuck? Your name
my
is
name's Sullivan.
Your name is Smith.
It's Sullivan.
What was that movie from the 80s, early 90s about the Irish people who make the R&B band? That's the Irish version of Roots.
Oh my fuck.
Jeez.
I know what you're talking about. I can't believe what the name of that shit is.
In 1804, Jackson had 9 slaves. By 1820, he had over 100. And by the time of his death in 1845, he had over 150 slaves.
I can understand why white people are afraid of getting outpopulated. Good Lord, those slaves can double in number.
Oh, my God.
Well, the population of the South for up until around the time of, I believe, during like the Black Diaspora of like the early 20th century, was primarily African American. That's why they did the 2/3 compromise. That's why they were always terrified of like slave uprisings, because not just because, you know, like, oh yeah, that would be bad if that happened. It would be catastrophic because slaves outnumbered like white people by an extreme amount.
Is it the 2/3 compromise or is it 3/5 compromise?
3/5. Sorry.
3/5, okay.
Over his lifetime, he would own a total of 300 slaves.
Unreal.
Jackson subscribed to a paternalistic idea of slavery, which claimed that slave ownership was morally acceptable as long as slaves were treated with humanity and their basic needs were cared for.
So,
it's
not a slave.
we'll go into that, because it's sort of like how, like, Thomas Jefferson, who was a huge piece of shit, like, his whole way that people are like, oh, no, he was, like, the enlightened slave master. And it's like, no, he wasn't.
No.
If you're enlightened, you let them all go. That's enlightened.
In practice,
the only one
slaves
that was enlightened was John Adams, but I think I don't know if he had any slaves.
John Adams didn't have slaves.
Yeah, I was going to say.
In practice, slaves were treated as a form of wealth whose productivity needed to be protected. But Jackson would direct harsh punishment for slaves who disobeyed or ran away.
Yeah, see, that's the difference right there.
An example of this, in 1804, an advertisement was posted by him to recover a runaway slave. He offered, quote-unquote, $10 extra for every 100 lashes any person will give him, up to 300 lashes, which was a number that could have been deadly.
There's no way that you're going to have me believe that somebody would get tied to a tree and get hit 300 times. Dude, whoever's hitting you is going to get tired and be like, all right, listen, we're at like 85. Are you good, man? Can you just tell him I did 300? Like, your back is fucking hamburger meat by that time anyway. You can't count at all. So, like, you would think at some point the humanity of the person whipping you when you're like half unconscious, be like, all right, it's kind of a waste of time at this point.
I mean, yeah.
Over time, his accumulation of wealth in both slaves and land placed him among the elite families of Tennessee. In May of 1806, Jackson fought a duel with Charles Dickinson.
Charles Dickinson?
No, his, like, cousin.
Oh, not Dickinson?
Yeah. Their dispute started over payments for a forfeited horse race, escalating for 6 months until they agreed to the duel. Dickens had fired first. The bullet hit Jackson in the chest, but shattered against his breastbone. Jackson returned fire and killed Dickinson. The killing would tarnish Jackson's reputation.
What? Again, Jackson, huge piece of shit. He can't catch a break, though, right here. He literally, this dude shot him in the chest. He lived, and then he killed the guy that shot him. People are like, shouldn't have done that. What? What? What the fuck?
Later that year, Jackson became involved in former Vice President Aaron Burr's plan to conquer Spanish Florida and drive the Spanish from Texas. Burr, who was touring what was then the Western United States, after mortally wounding Alexander Hamilton in a duel, stayed with the Jacksons at the Hermitage in 1805. He eventually persuaded Jackson to join his plan.
There's a in October, street in Trenton called Hermitage, and it's been like 20 years, but it's not well. It's like in the middle of the ghetto projects, like real bad. And you don't go there, you know, that kind of town. Mm-hmm. Every time someone says it, that's all I think of. There are these two black girls that worked with me at my first IT job, and this girl, one of them was April, and then I forget the other one's name, but April asked me if I'd give her a ride home because I was leaving, right? And I was like, "Yeah, where you live?" She goes, "Hermitage," and starts laughing, and I'm like, I can't take you.
I'll drop you off outside.
Have you looked at my Toyota Corolla? It doesn't have tinted windows.
I'll drop you off a couple blocks away, but I'm not actually bringing it to your house. And that's
my God, dude. No, fuck no. At night? No. It's a bad area,
In October of 1806, Jackson wrote James Winchester that the United States, quote unquote, can conquer not only Florida, but all Spanish North America. He informed the Tennessee militia.
So Florida. In the 1800s, all of Spanish North America. So Florida.
Well, it's also like Texas, California, Nevada, New Mexico.
Like Mexico and like natives.
Mexico doesn't exist yet.
I don't mean like Mexico is a country. More like Mexico is an idea, I guess.
Well, it's part of the Spanish Empire. It's New Spain.
Okay.
Because a lot of the missions in California were started in like the late 1700s, like the mission San Gabriel.
That one that I didn't know about until just now.
Yeah, makes sense. The same. He informed the Tennessee militia that it should be ready to march at a moment's notice, quote unquote, when the government and constituted authority of our country require it, and agreed to provide boats and provisions for the expedition. Jackson sent a letter to President Thomas Jefferson telling him that Tennessee was ready to defend the nation's honor. Jackson also expressed uncertainty about the enterprise. He warned the governor of Louisiana, William Claiborne, and Tennessee Senator Daniel Smith that some of the people involved in this plan might be intending to break away from the United States. In December, Jefferson ordered Burr to be arrested for treason. Jackson, safe from arrest because of his extensive paper trail, organized the militia to capture the conspirators. He testified before a grand jury in 1807, implying that it was Burr's associate, James Wilkinson, who was guilty of treason, not Burr. Burr was acquitted of the charges.
So he got our boy Aaron Burr off.
I think he was part of it. I don't think it was entirely him who did it.
He definitely did, but, bro.
You know, he planted a gun on a guy, and you know, he placed his burner musket in the guy's like carriage.
Burner musket.
On June 18th, 1812, the United States declared war on Great Britain, launching the War of 1812. Though the war was primarily based around maritime issues between the two countries, it provided white American settlers on the southern frontier the opportunity to overcome Native American resistance to settlement and undermine the British support of the Native American tribes and to remove Florida from the Spanish Empire. Because the Great Britain is allied with a number of Native American tribes, They will use this as an excuse to like go to war with those tribes.
Yeah, Jack, I could see that.
Jackson immediately offered to raise volunteers for the war, but he was not called to duty until after the United States military was repeatedly defeated in the American Northwest. After these defeats, in January of 1813, Jackson enlisted mainly Native Americans and British.
Nice.
Hmm. After these defeats in January of 1813, Jackson enlisted over 2,000 volunteers who were ordered to head to New Orleans to defend against a British attack. When his forces arrived in Natchez, they were ordered to halt by Governor Wilkinson, the commander at New Orleans and the man Jackson accused of treason after the Burr Adventure. A little later, Jackson received a letter from the Secretary of War, John Armstrong, stating that his volunteers were not needed and that they were to hand over any supplies to Wilkinson and disband. Jackson refused to disband his troops. Instead, he led them to the difficult led them on the difficult march back to Nashville, earning the nickname Hickory, which would later become Old Hickory for his perceived toughness.
Oh, okay.
Like a hickory tree?
Yeah, you know, I didn't know that there was, you know, could call them old oak for all I care, just old fucking tree. Like, why does it have to be hickory?
Well, they called him Professor Oak. After returning to Nashville, Jackson and one of his colonels, John Coffey, got into a tavern brawl over honor with the brothers Jesse and Thomas Hart Benton.
Coffey. John Coffey never hurt a soul. He was framed and in prison. He was able to heal that man's UTI. Come on, not John Coffey.
Oh my God.
I don't feel so good. nobody was killed, but Jackson received a gunshot in the shoulder that nearly killed him.
So now he's two now. He's getting shot twice. Once in the chest and once on the shoulder.
Jackson had not fully recovered from his wounds when Governor Willie Blount called out the militia in September of 1813 following the August Fort Mims massacre. This massacre was carried out by the Red Sticks, a Creek Confederacy faction that was allied with Tecumseh, who we talked about previously. To remind people, he was a Shawnee chief who was fighting with the British against the United States. And they had killed nearly 250 militiamen and civilians at Fort Mims in retaliation for an ambush by American militia at Burnt Corn Creek.
Yeah, you want to throw a comma in that sentence? Good God. Also, Red Sticks, I believe that's not the proper way to say it. I think they're the commandeers now.
They found it was more marketable.
Yeah, you know.
Jackson's objective was to destroy the Red Sticks.
I mean, Blue Sticks. Blue Sticks buy sneakers Tuesday. Oh shit!
He headed south from Fayetteville, Tennessee, in October with 2,500 militiamen, establishing Fort Strother as their supply base. He sent his cavalry under General Coffey ahead of the main force, destroying Red Stick villages and capturing supplies. Coffey defeated a band of Red Sticks at the Battle of Teluhatchee on November 3rd, and Jackson defeated another band later that month at the Battle of Talladega. By January of 1814, the expiration of enlistments and desertions had reduced Jackson's force by around 1,000 volunteers, but he still continued the offensive.
So he's down to 1,500 people now.
More or less. Because I'm assuming some people also died in these battles.
Yeah, fair enough. So he's probably down to 1,000 men.
The Red Sticks counterattacked at the battles of Emuckfaw and...
just call me?
And Eno to Chopo Creek.
Yeah, that's what I thought the fuck you said. Watch your mouth.
No, I think it's in Idaho Creek, not in Eno to Chopo Creek.
The Jamiroquai Creek.
Yeah, the Jamiroquai Creek. Yeah.
Jackson repelled them, but was forced to withdraw to Fort Strother. Jackson's army was reinforced by further recruitment and the addition of a regular army unit, the 39th U.S. Infantry Regiment.
Oh, so you got the real boys in there now, the actual army.
The few, the proud. And that's the Marines. So they got an army of one. They just sent them one guy.
What are you, Pauly Shore in the army now?
Hey, buddy.
Going, gone. That's the Energizer Bunny. Gentlemen, we're be all you can be.
Nah, they just sent Pauly Shore, and as a bonus, they sent Andy Dick.
Andrew Jackson kind of looks like Andy Dick. That's the new conspiracy. He is Andy Dick. Like, reincarnated.
So this combined force of 3,000 men, including really? Cherokee, Choctaw, and Creek allies, attacked a Red Stick fort at Horseshoe Bend on the Tallapoosa River, which was manned by about 1,000 men. The Red Sticks were overwhelmed and massacred. Almost all their warriors were killed, and nearly 300 women and children were taken prisoner and distributed to Jackson's Native American allies.
He does kind of look like Andy Dick.
I told you.
I'm shocked. Did you just say this?
Go ahead.
I say that they're going to have to... they're gonna have to have him play in the biopic. Oh my god! When Andy Dick goes like hard right conservative or whatever, like all those other like awful comedy guys from the 90s.
It will happen eventually. Did Pauly Shore make a hard turn?
No,
or is he just shut the fuck up and not said anything?
He's fine. The thing with him is he's just a nepo baby.
Is he?
Yeah, Mitzi Shore.
Yeah, Mitzi Shore on the comedy store.
One Joey Diaz, that woman Joey Diaz always talks about, Mitzi Shore. Mitzi Shore, yeah. She ran the store, dog. Mitzi Shore. Yeah, that's Pauly Shore's mom. She died a couple years ago.
Yeah, she ran it. She ran it pretty much until she died, and it was originally her ex-husband's comedy thing, because I think he was a comedian. But she got it in the divorce, so she ran it.
Okay.
But every big name comedy guy from the 80s to the early 90s came out of the store.
Oh, I know all about the comedy store. I just didn't know that he was affiliated with that.
Yeah, Sam Kinison used to babysit him.
That's fucking hilarious. That explains so much about his personalities as a human being.
The victory would break the power of the Red Sticks. And Jackson continued his scorched earth campaign of burning villages, destroying supplies, and starving Red Stick women and children. The campaign ended when William Weatherford, the Red Stick leader, surrendered, although some Red Sticks fled to East Florida. On June 8th, Jackson was appointed a brigadier general in the United States Army, and 10 days later was made a brevet major general with command of the 7th Military District, which included Tennessee, Louisiana, the Mississippi Territory, and the Muscogee Creek Confederacy. Hmm. The president at that time, James Madison's approval, Jackson imposed the Treaty of Fort Jackson. The treaty required all Creek, including those who had remained allies, to surrender 23 million acres of land to the United States. Jackson then turned his attention to the British and Spanish. He moved his forces to Mobile, Alabama, in August, accusing the Spanish general of West Florida, Mateo Gonzalez Manrique, of arming the Red Sticks and threatened to attack.
This sounds very George Bushy. Just accusing people of some shit, and they'd be like, we're just going to come in there and take your shit, okay?
I mean, he armed the Red Sticks, right? I mean, you can't let that slide.
Fool me once, shame on you.
No, he said he accused them of arming the Red Sticks.
Now watch this drop. We must stop these terrorist killers. Now watch this drop.
They're going to go into the Red Stick camps. They're not going to find any crates of weapons stamped.
All they're going to find in there
is Mateo's name, and he's going to look stupid. And there's going to be
Coffee went in front of Congress. You know, he had pictures of the mobile weapons platforms that the Spanish were using to transport the weapons to the Red Sticks.
Understand, this is the 1800s, so mobile weapons platforms just means horses.
He had some yellow cake. which is a very rich, sustaining food that these natives will fortify them and make them strong enough to kill us at an increasing number. We need to strike down before it's too late.
Or as they called it, maize.
The governor responded by inviting the British to land at Pensacola to defend it, which violated Spanish neutrality.
It's like that's like every Trump administration decision. It's like the absolute opposite intended effect happens for everything.
The British attempted to capture Mobile, but their four warships.
But you know, we're not sure how it's going to work out. We're just going to do it. Okay, fuck, we got to turn that off the next day.
God damn it, we tried. We tried.
Oh, you know what? We're going to give you the special Canada deal. And Canada's just like, nah, fuck you. All of it gone.
I saw
Jack Daniels. I saw an article the other day. People. 600. Because Canada, Ontario buys, is the number one customer of Jack Daniels.
Insane.
And they don't pay for it until they sell it. So they just shipped all of it back.
I didn't believe it at first when I saw it just because of the number. Like, I assumed it was a typo. But the other day, I guess they imposed a 250% tariff on Canada. I don't know if it was on anything specifically, but just seeing the number 250%, maybe stupid. Like double check to make sure that wasn't a typo.
Again, it's just going back to little fucking children just throwing numbers out there that just have no real meaning, no basis in reality. Just 250%. Like a kid, they like.
What do you guys think? What do you think? Airport. Huh? What size should I do?
Pricing. Hey, how much do you think this banana should cost? $8.50. Okay.
Listen,
well, banana now costs $8.50.
Exactly. Anytime you pull one of those numbers out, all you're doing is you just have to look at it like this: is this gonna look stupid if this was a shoe? Meaning, like, if I was like, okay, here's a number, right? I'm gonna wear that size shoe. Like, it's fucking ridiculous. Like, why the fuck would you pull that number out? It doesn't make sense.
All I'm saying is that he 100% every time he did bankruptcy or he declared bankruptcy, he yelled at like Michael Scott.
Yeah, I declare bankruptcy. Fucking Roy Cohn's just like, Donald, it doesn't work like that. All right,
can't
I gotta fill out a lot of fucking paperwork.
He's more annoying than the twinks when they get into the cocaine.
Yeah, you ever seen a twink all coked up? No. You know why you didn't see them? They become a blur. What?
The British...
You said the episode was going to be called Blurry Twinks. I'm not the one who chose the topic. Blurry Twinks sounds like a gay like ufology site.
And Bear Squatch.
Bear Squatch from the Blurry Twinks today.
Which is just like a out of focus picture of like a bear in some jeans just walking in the woods without a shirt on.
Oh, man. Like a gay, a big gay man, right?
Yeah.
God damn it.
Not Smokey the Bear.
Well, he does wear suspenders, you know?
He does. He wears jeans.
Does he? I thought he had suspenders.
From what I remember, he either wears jeans or he wears like khakis with suspenders.
I think I confused Smokey the Bear with Hillbilly Jim from the WWF.
Oh my god!
Of the wedding fame,
yes.
I'm sure Jackson would also be a big fan of Hillbilly Jim. The British would attempt to capture Mobile, but their four warships were repulsed at Fort Boyer. Jackson then entered Florida, defeating the Spanish and British forces at the Battle of Pensacola on November 7th.
Get him out of there.
Afterwards, the Spanish surrendered and the British withdrew. Weeks later, Jackson learned that the British were planning an attack on New Orleans, which was the gateway to the lower Mississippi River and also the key to control of the American West at that time.
Now.
He evacuated Pensacola, strengthened the garrison at Mobile, and led his troops to New Orleans. Jackson arrived in New Orleans on December 1st, 1814.
Here we go.
There he instituted martial law because he worried about the loyalty of the city's Creole and Spanish inhabitants. He augmented his force by forming an alliance with John Lafitte's smugglers and raising units of free African Americans in Creek, paying non-white volunteers the same salary as whites. This would give Jackson a force of around 5,000 men when the British arrived. The British arrived in New Orleans in mid-December. Admiral Alexander Cochrane was the overall commander of the operation. General Edward Pakenham commanded the army of 10,000 soldiers, many of whom had served in the Napoleonic Wars.
Ah, yes.
As the British advanced up the east bank of the Mississippi River, Jackson constructed a fortified position to block them. The climatic battle took place on January 8th, when the British launched a frontal assault. Their troops made easy targets for the Americans, protected by their defenses, and the attack ended in disaster. The British suffered over 2,000 casualties, including Pakenham, to the Americans' 71.
I thought you were going to say
Christ.
The British suffered 2,000 calories, and I was like, dog, that's just a regular day for a grown man.
Jeez, dog.
They didn't do any work that day.
They lost 2,000 to our 71?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The British would decamp from New Orleans at the end of January, but they would still remain a threat to the area. Jackson refused to lift martial law and kept the militia under arms. He approved the execution of 6 militiamen for desertion.
Oof.
Some Creoles registered as French citizens with the French consul and demanded to be discharged from the militia due to their foreign nationality. Jackson then ordered all French citizens to leave the city within 3 days, and had a member of the Louisiana legislature, Louis Loulier, arrested when he wrote a newspaper article criticizing Jackson's continuation of martial law.
This guy's name sounds like noises Arnold makes. Lou Loulier.
All right, so y'all want to be discharged from the militia because y'all are French? That's cool. All French, we get the fuck out.
Jeez. All right, that's it. You're banned, Seinfeld. Get out.
I mean, that's exactly what he did, to be honest.
Yeah.
A U.S. District Court Judge, Dominic A. Hall, signed a writ of habeas corpus for Loulier for his release, and Jackson had Hall arrested as well. A military court ordered Loulier's release, but Jackson kept him in prison and evicted Hall from the city. Although Jackson lifted martial law when he received official word that the Treaty of Ghent, which ended the war with the British, had been signed, his previous behavior tainted his reputation in New Orleans.
Don't say.
The Treaty of Ghent was also signed in December of 1814 before the Battle of New Orleans was fought. But his victory assured that the United States would have control of the region between Mobile and New Orleans, and it would not be effectively contested by any of the European powers. This victory would make him a national hero, and on February 27th, 1815, he was given the thanks of Congress and awarded a Congressional Gold Medal.
Okay.
One big factor of this of his victory there was that his control of the region, this control of the region by the American government, allowed them to ignore one of the articles in the treaty, which would have returned the Creek lands taken in the Treaty of Fort Jackson.
Okay.
It's revealed the secret.
Yeah, so he's just being a piece of shit, heard.
So following the war, Jackson remained in command of troops in the southern half of the United States and was permitted to make his headquarters at the Hermitage. He was appointed as Indian Commissioner.
Don't do it, Andrew.
Plenipotentiary. And Jackson continued to displace the Native Americans in areas under his command. Despite resistance from the Secretary of the Treasury, William Crawford, he negotiated and signed 5 treaties between 1860 and 1820, in which the Creek, Choctaw, Cherokee, and Chickasaw ceded tens of millions of acres of land to the United States. These included the Treaty of Turkeytown, the Treaty of Tuscaloosa, and the Treaty of Doak Stand.
I'd love Turkey Town. Listen, also get me on the Village of Mashed Potatoes and the Gravy River. Shoot me on down over there to Apple Pie City. Turkey, I'm about all of it.
Was supposed to be the national bird.
It's a way cooler bird than the bald eagle.
Yeah,
in every respect.
I like a bald eagle. I just saw the bald eagles at the wetlands. It's pretty cool.
That was a joke, yeah. Steve. It wasn't real. Okay.
Did you know that?
Because we could make the national bird a bird that has a high pitched, like bitchy voice.
Did you know
voice.
That the ham was the original pig of the United States? Did you know that?
Babe.
Did you remember when that happened? That was cool, wasn't
it? Did you know that?
When you said the original great seal of the United States was actually a great, like, big seal, the R&B singer? You thought I was going to say Seal the Animal, right?
But he had the body of Seal the Animal on the $2 bill.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't acknowledge that. Just like I don't acknowledge post Ride the Lightning Metallica. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh my god, here we go.
No, I like Injustice for All a lot too.
They have a Metallica pinball. Yeah, you've done it. They had it there, the Metallica pinball.
Yep.
You just gotta play those first albums, then you can just walk away after that.
I'm just gonna come out and say it. I love the Black Album. I don't give a shit. I loved it.
Oh, most people do.
Yeah. I don't find that controversial at all.
I also like Reload.
I like Load, dude. I thought Load was good.
You know? I liked Reload, though.
I've never heard Reload. I stopped listening, so I can't really judge them. I've heard a couple songs on Saint Anger that were
not good.
After this, Ryan's gonna go listen to it. He's gonna pour himself a glass from a bottle of blacked vodka.
Yeah, blackened.
No, not vodka, whiskey. The blacked whiskey that they have. Where they put a Metallica playlist on a... is it Blackened?
Yeah, because the song is Blackened.
But they play like a Metallica playlist to a cask of whiskey.
Blacked whiskey is not allowed to be posted on 4chan anymore.
But Jackson would soon become embroiled in a conflict in Florida. A former
everybody who comes to fucking Florida gets embroiled in conflict. It's not news.
A former British post at Prospect.
Ryan just made the white guys. You ain't special.
There's a reason why Florida has the little saying: "It's come on vacation, leave on probation, come back on a violation." Florida is guaranteed to get you fucked up. Come down here.
Mm-hmm.
The former British post at Prospect Bluff, which became known to Americans as quote unquote the Negro Fort, remained occupied by more than 1,000 former soldiers of the British Royal and Colonial Marines, escaped slaves, and various indigenous peoples. It had become a magnet for escaped slaves and was seen as a threat to the property rights of American slave owners, even a potential source of insurrection by slaves. Jackson ordered Colonel Duncan Quinch to capture the fort in July of 1816. He destroyed it and killed many of the garrison. Some survivors were enslaved while others fled into the wilderness of Florida.
Tell you right now, it didn't end well. Run into the wilderness, man. Honestly, if you're escaping being enslaved and potentially killed versus trying to run into a Florida swamp and survive, really flip a coin. It makes no difference. You're going to die either way. Florida's going to eat you, or...
Well, you can...
We just did the trail over here in Central Florida, and it was something
else. It's tough,
man. And,
it's rough.
I mean, I've done a lot of trails, but, like, it was a really nice trail, but no, I lost my train of thought. There was a fucking gator there. It's the biggest gator I've ever seen in my life. I mean, it was at least 11 feet, like... very big. I've seen a lot of gators now. I've never seen a gator that big. Looked like a goddamn fucking small car.
And you said this was in July too, right?
So no, this was today.
Hot, No, 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 no. What, these people escaping into the quote unquote wilderness of Florida?
Yeah, that happened like, today.
July is what I hear. July. Yeah, that's but like, happened. I mean, come on. Now you're talking about like humid swamp, dude. You're not gonna make it. You're not.
But
you gotta have. You gotta have a lot of water, man. There's no way.
No.
But they could have also hooked up with the Seminoles, which did happen.
Blow, Seminole wind.
The Seminoles didn't just kill him as soon as they saw him?
No, the Seminoles actually, they would incorporate them into the, sometimes would incorporate them into the tribe, or communities of escaped slaves would sort of live near the Seminoles and sort of like pay tribute to them or whatever as sort of like protection. Mm. But within the region, white settlers were constantly in conflict with the Seminoles, who straddled the border between the U.S. and Florida. In December of 1817, the Secretary of War John C. Calhoun initiated the first Seminole War by ordering Jackson to lead a campaign to, quote-unquote, with full power to conduct the war as he might think best. Jackson believed the best way to do this was to seize Florida from Spain once and for all. After departing, Jackson wrote to President James Monroe, and let it be signified to me through any channel that the possession of the Floridas would be desirable to the United States, and in 60 days it will be accomplished.
Oh, okay, big words there, bro. All right.
Jackson invaded Florida and captured the Spanish fort at St. Mark's and occupied Pensacola. Seminole and Spanish resistance was effectively ended by May of 1818. He also captured two British subjects, Robert Ambrister and Alexander Arbuthnot, who had been working with the Seminole.
Arbuthnot.
Yeah.
I remember that name from history class, Arbuthnot.
Yeah, Arbuthnot.
After a brief trial, Jackson executed both of them, causing an international incident with the British.
Got to him.
Jackson's actions polarized Monroe's cabinet. The occupied territories were returned to Spain. Calhoun wanted him censured for violating the Constitution since the United States had not declared war on Spain. The Secretary of State, John Quincy Adams, defended him as he thought Jackson's occupation of Pensacola would lead Spain to sell Florida, which Spain did in the Adams-Onis Treaty of 1819. In February of 1819, a congressional investigation exonerated Jackson, and his victory was instrumental in convincing the Seminoles to sign the Treaty of Moultrie Creek in 1823, which surrendered much of their land in Florida.
Last time there was any kind of like discrepancy or conflict in the state of Florida. Amen.
Well, thank you for reading from the new DeSantis approved history book.
Florida, and if this is the DeSantis history book, it's white people and Indians lived in harmony forever and ever.
It just has like unironically that Kelly cartoon where it's like America when they don't have like racial stereotypes, and America when they do. And it's like, all the racial stereotypes, everyone's like happy and holding hands, there's like rainbows. And then when there isn't, like everybody's killing each other.
Jesus.
The panic of 1819, the United States' first prolonged financial depression, caused Congress to reduce the military size and abolish Jackson's generalship. In compensation, Monroe made him the first territorial governor of Florida in 1821. He served as the governor for 2 months, returning to the Hermitage in ill health. After his recovery, Jackson, who had been a Freemason since at least 1798, became the Grand Master of the Grand Lodge of Tennessee for 1822 to 1823. Around this time, he also completed negotiations for Tennessee to purchase Chickasaw lands. This became known as the Jackson Purchase. Jackson, Overton and another colleague had speculated in some of the land and used their portion to form the town of Memphis.
So Memphis is born because of Andrew Jackson and a couple of people, huh?
That's how I got to Memphis. Essentially, essentially them stealing land from the Chickasaw.
Incredible.
Which I guess it depends on the tribe, is like individual members or parts of the tribe could probably sell the land. But under law, which isn't established yet at this point, it is the states cannot make treaties with Native American nations. Only the United States government can. But that's not really codified until Worcester versus Georgia, which happens around like 5 years from this point.
Worcester? Worcester?
Worcester.
Worcester.
Worcestershire.
Are you saying? Yeah, is that what you're saying? You say Worcestershire? Worcestershire?
No, it's Worcester. Worcester. Worcester.
Worcester.
Oh, yeah, Worcester. Worcester. Welcome to Worcester. $1.25, please.
I'll come out of the booth, you fucking queen.
I'll fuck you and all your fish-eating friends in front of your fucking mothers.
just the bitch, booth fuck guy. You forgot to pay the fucking toll, you daddy whore. I'll fucking drop you with a boot to the fucking skull, you. I'm not going to say the rest.
Just the booth guy in his uniform with a Celtics jersey on top, like a Larry Bird jersey.
Hell yeah. I love Adam Sandler. Smart man. You got to go with where you're comfortable when you're out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But we'll wrap it up there, boys, and we will continue with the story of Andrew Jackson next time.
Oh my God. Riveting. I can't believe that we got to the Adam Sandler part already.
I can't wait till we get to the part where Andrew Jackson dons a Bruins jersey and a hockey stick. He's golf.
Oh, man. He scores all in one and just goes, let's go.
And
it's
going to be really tragic when we get to the part where Andrew Jackson got Phil Hartman's wife addicted to cocaine and then she killed both of them.
Steve. All right. Can we end one episode on a positive note? I mean, come on.
Spoiler alert, man. Come on.
All right. Good night.
Good luck.
Bye.